Ryan Stanton here with ASAP Frontline, and you can probably pick up from a little bit more of the ambiance of the background noise that we're in an afternoon session here at Das Smack with the beers in hand for a lot of the patrons here. And also, I think we're about to run out of the decent weather here in Berlin with the storm clouds on the horizon. Though I've looked at the map, and I think we're safe. And me with this lightning rod in my hand, won't have to worry about it for a couple hours. So here with a friend of mine that we've come through ASAP and also communicating back and forth, a very, very creative person, doing a lot of things with not only writing but with also music. And you've heard from him before when we've talked about some other topics and sepsis and things like that. But today we're talking about his wheelhouse, you know, his interest and really where he excels other than the classical music and musical side of things. But and that's with writing. So Jeremy Faust is an emergency physician and also very creative, does a lot of writing, and has actually had conferences or sessions here at both Smack Dub and Das Smack, and I wanted to talk about that, and we wanted to go back and forth about the media aspect of healthcare and medicine, whereas you take on the writing. I do a lot of radio and TV type stuff and some of those differences. So give us a background, Jeremy, where you're from, also talking about these two sessions that you had through the Smack conferences.
All right. Thanks, Ryan. It's great to be back on the front line. When we were talking about, you know, what breeze should we shoot today, it occurred to me that both of us do something similar, which is that we share our passion for emergency medicine with audiences beyond emergency physicians and other emergency providers. We reach out. So you do a lot of television, and I do a lot of writing for general audiences. And it's a really thrilling, exciting thing. It's become a big part of my life, is writing basically journalism or op-ed pieces or a hybrid of those. And I've done just a bunch of that in the past year or two. But in doing that, I realized I should not be the only one doing this. I can't do it all. And EM voices really educate the masses on so many different issues, whether it's national health care or, geez, here's why you shouldn't get antibiotics for viruses. EM docs, we are well positioned to really change minds outside of our own communities. And so I love doing it, and hopefully some other people do too. But in order to do it well, you've got to know something about writing in these venues. So for me, I largely write in a magazine called Slate, but I've written for others. And it's not like writing a journal article where we have an abstract and a methods, and it's a different format. And so last year at SMAC, I did a talk about how do you start these essays? How do you bring them in? And sometimes it's an anecdote, sometimes it's not. And then this year I did a talk for 45 minutes on how do you get out? How do you finish this thing? Because you can't just say more research is needed like you can in a peer review. So I talked about how you can get people to kind of how to wrap it up, be interested and enough that they'll keep wanting to think about this. And there's two models. There's the SNL model, the Saturday Night Live, where the punchline comes and then they can never end the sketch. It like goes on and on. And then there's the Monty Python thing where they say the funniest thing and then the sketch just ends. And it's like the new thing. So you can't do that, either of those, in writing. So I talked a little bit about how do you get out. That's called a kicker. And there's a lot of different kinds. So I went through that. And the idea is, once you have a structure and a format for how these things work, you can sort of be more efficient and write quickly. And that's what you got to do.
And I think one of the things I want to focus on is that writing is very different. You started to get into that journal writing, which is things very much like we are trained as physicians, very scientific, very regimented. Everything's very, you basically take a prior work and copy the format and put your words into it. Whereas, you know, you were mentioning before we got started that, you know, a difference between the Slate versus some of the other publications, whether it's something that's geared towards professionals, business people, whether it's geared towards teenagers, kids, things like that. The writing is very different. So much like writing books, it's more like that as opposed to the scientific journals, which are very much geared towards there's not much variation in those. Whereas if you go pull magazines off the shelf, they're putting up the canopies right now inside our area to make sure that none of us get blown away here in Berlin. I mean, just the cost of of sending our bodies back to the U.S. would be cost prohibitive anyway. So I appreciate their efforts here in keeping us safe and dry here at the Tempodrome in Berlin. But, you know, just as going and picking up a different magazine, you know, the format is very different versus a National Geographic versus a Time magazine versus Maxim magazine or Sports Illustrated or whatever. You know, it's very different. So get into that a little bit, into that focus. And as a writer, if people get into writing, how do they gear those differences and appreciate those differences and the considerations as they sit down there to put pen to paper?
So the real trick is the balance between assuming that they know too much and therefore they tune out because they have no idea what you meant when you said cardiomyopathy, and the opposite, which is, okay, we're not idiots. Like, we did pass the second grade. We know that the heart pumps blood. So the trick is, how do you teach them about things that maybe are just beyond what the average person in your publication would know? And one of my favorite writers, is one of my mentors in writing, is Perry Klass, who's a pediatrician and a journalist at NYU. And what's amazing about Perry is how she manages to define ideas and medical concepts as she goes. The word gets described kind of almost by definition, and that way doctors read it and go, oh yeah, they're talking about the right thing. This is a smart physician talking about it. But the average reader says, oh, I got that word. It's in context. So the real trick is, again, as you said, knowing what your audience is going to be and trying to tailor it. The second piece is there's a cheat. And a cheat is you ask your editor. And when you write for a good publication, hopefully you get a good editor. And as you develop a relationship, you say, hey, does this make sense? Do I need to go into further detail about this, or is this kind of obvious? And so you have to be able to take the feedback and say, no, we need more here, or we need less here. It's hard because you want to get to the punchline, but you can't get to the punchline if the setup's not there. So it's always an ebb and a flow, a yin and yang kind of thing. And so you look at the publication, you look at other medical pieces that have been published maybe in that outlet, you talk to an editor, talk to friends, and you can always run it by me. I'm usually pretty busy, but if someone says, hey, where do you think this ought to go? I'll say, oh, you ought to send this to Politico or something. I'm not too successful with that, but you know, just get advice from people who've done this. When you're doing television, Ryan, how do you know, like, you know, you've got 30 seconds. You have such a small, I mean, I have 1,000 words, maybe 1,500. Yeah, I could kind of make some choices, but how do you decide, like, what am I really going to get out? How do you decide what language to use? What's the vetting process?
Well, the interesting thing about TV is that if you want to think about it like an article, it's basically a 500 word article. You know, and most TV segments are looking for 2 minutes. And so in TV, you speak in headlines. And what I found is that when I do TV, it's very superficial. You know, you're just glancing the surface in a hopes of maybe that it'll inspire folks to look deeper, but you just don't honestly have the time. And that's why I started a show and went further, so I could expand on topics and get and really dig deep and do a 30-minute show as opposed to a 2-minute news segment. But again, it's very much who your audience is, what you're looking for in terms of who we're speaking to. Whether it's, you know, if you look at network TV, the vast majority of folks are upper 50s, early 60s, elderly folks. You know, what time of day is it? That gauges the audience. The show in the morning and the noon show is very different than the evening news, which is much more regimented. And you can just see that by looking at whether they're in suits or whether they're in polo shirts or whether they're just in shirts and ties or whatever they're in. So it's very much about who you're speaking to, how you're speaking, you know, to gauge that interest. But, you know, I think it's less variability in TV because the audiences are more homogenous than with publications, especially print publications that focus very much on a specific type of audience. So Politico, for example, versus Newsweek versus, you know, I use the example again, Maxim magazine, which really just wants crazy, you know, sex facts or whatever it may be. And so I think it's harder in that standpoint from a writing, but once you get into it and you get that foot in the door, and I think that's the hardest step in terms of this is getting that foot in the door. I mean, it's taken me, in terms of TV, 8 to 10 years, but I've got 26 years of media experience to get my foot in the door and start to make some traction. Some people hit it a little bit earlier and get some success. But I mean, I think one of the things to do is to reach out to people that are successful. You know, me doing TV and radio, you with print, Robert Glatter, who does a lot of TV and print as well, and Sudip Bose, who's ASEP member who does a lot for Huffington Post. You know, reach out and question, because, you know, you're occasionally going to find that person who's kind of a douchebag, who doesn't want you to succeed because they think it's their little property. But I think for most of us, and I know with you and I, just in our conversations, we want anybody who can succeed to succeed, because our goal is education, and education isn't about who, it's about that we can get it out there. And if you have the opportunity to get more people involved, then doing that. So reaching out to people and engaging that. And I mean, I know there's definitely some within the Twitter sphere and writing that are very kind of standoffish and, for the most part, not very cool people. But I think most of us are pretty welcome and want to help people out if we can find the time. But be patient, because as you said, I know you're incredibly busy, you know, just following along the sniping on social media. But, you know, us as well, with being very busy, be patient, continue to send messages and get that input and help, because, you know, that's the key is I want people to succeed.
Yeah, last week, a friend of mine who's a brilliant, brilliant guy had an idea for Slate, and he said, you know, can you send this over? And I was happy to. I sent it to my editor. Editor gets back, says, well, this isn't the piece we're looking for, but let me talk to him. Maybe there's something else we can do, a different angle. And so, you know, that relationship could happen. You know, how do you get your foot in the door? You don't necessarily have to go through someone like me. I literally pitched them cold on a story. I said, here's who I am. Here's two sentences of one I'd like to write about. And because you don't know me, here's the essay. I wrote it on spec, you know, on speculation. I wrote it before I had a place to publish it. And if you do that a bunch of times to a bunch of places, someone's going to say yes. And then you might develop a relationship. And now it gets to the point where sometimes I'll pitch the editor a link. And my pitch will be like, this is BS. Can I please write about that? And she'll say, yeah, that sounds good. Or sometimes she'll say, well, yeah, but what's your angle? Or she'll say, well, this has been written about five times. You know, why do we need to do it? So it's, but the idea is you start with a pitch and a piece and develop a relationship. And in terms of what you're saying, I've never had the experience where I gave someone an opportunity and regretted it. You know, like, oh, they took my little limelight or whatever, they outshined me. In fact, that's, you know, I'd like it if someone would do great and make some new connections, maybe at an outlet that I don't know, so I could get hooked up. It's like quid pro quo. You know, we help each other out. We want to. But, you know, you also look at, like, who your heroes are, how'd they do, what did they do? You know, Atul Gawande, you look at him. He wrote Slate before he wrote at The New Yorker. And do I just want to be Atul Gawande? I'd love to be. But I also realize that my goal is a bit different. So I want to write for that audience, but I want to write a little more edgy, political. I'm not afraid to be divisive. I think what's amazing about Atul is he's, I say his name like I know him personally. I don't. What's amazing about him is that he writes about really important issues in ways that are pretty hard to really fight with. It's just a remarkable achievement that he does that. I see myself as a little more, I love controversy. I love to stir it up. So I want to take the message of, you know what, medicine's not so clear. It's ugly. Ask questions. Don't just do, if your doctor doesn't do the guideline, here's why. And I want to stir it up. And so I look at what my goal is, sort of like a more of an Atul Gawande of EM with an edge of disruption for questioning things. So, you know, look at other writers and see where they're publishing and say, oh, they published this piece. And sometimes you can just email that person and say, hey, who's the editor? You know, that's all you got to do. Oh, who's the editor? You just know who to email. It's that kind of a connection. You don't need a fake introduction or that kind of a thing.
Well, you hit on something there that I think we can summarize my TV side, giving the headlines of what you can do to fit in but stand out. So you have to figure out what their recipe is, but then also what sets you apart to what they can get anywhere else or somewhere else. Because if you think about it, none of us are really treading new ground. It's what are you that's different or unique and can and define for their audience. And, you know, when I do stuff with our local radio stations or TV stations, many times it's having the expertise. And as emergency physicians, that's an amazing thing, is you have the expertise on something that's difficult to find anymore. If you look at TV, the newsrooms, and with the radio, the newsrooms very rarely have a health-specific person anymore. So they don't have the knowledge. They're looking for experts. And so being that expert and then having the availability, being easy to talk to, being easy to communicate, will huge and get you that traction. And I think there's probably five doctors, ER doctors that I'm close with, that I have connections with through TV or radio, and we all help each other. We're into helping each other if you have input or getting things out there. Heck, I remember ASAP 16, ASAP 15, when Robert Glatter had an ABC hit, and I happened to have a camera there that I was using for the first ASAP Frontline podcast, and we taped him and we uploaded it to ABC News for them to have because they had a target. And that's what we look for, is being able to help each other out. Now, get me back to the writing. It is very different. It's not like Facebook, which is very stream of consciousness, writing like conversation, whittling it down. Writing is different than a conversation, and yet you want it to be relatable like a conversation. How does somebody adjust writing like you're typically used to with medicine for very scientific papers versus the writing you do when you're just texting somebody, in terms of getting that structure put together that is attractive? Because I think you have to have something there. And then the other thing that you mentioned also is then having people willing to read it. Like my wife, who's standing right across from us here, she reads a lot of my stuff and is very happy to shoot me down when I really sound or look terrible or do something silly. But having those people that can read it and review it for you, that's outside, because what you see isn't necessarily what other people are going to see.
Yeah, you've got to show it to at least one person, sometimes more than one person, but not too many more, because there is such a thing as too many cooks in the kitchen. This is funny. I have Siri read me back my pieces, because I care about rhythm and about how things sound. And if it sounds good being read by Siri, it's good news. Plus, you can proofread over and over and still miss something. But when it's being read to you, it really sticks out like a sore thumb. So you miss that extra but or and or whatever you left behind. So that's kind of an important thing. The next thing I would say is, yeah, structure is so huge. Because once you have a good structure, you can deviate and you can innovate. And you can be, some pieces don't adhere to structures that you've been taught. But if you know them, they're good to rely on. So I'll talk about three. One is the sort of kebab. So you think of a meat kebab, a meat on a stick. So maybe the first piece is a vegetable. That's your sort of like anecdote. Okay, well, you know, Ryan was a young-ish adult male with chest pain. He came into the ER. What he didn't know was he had a rare collagen vascular disease. And then it's like, what do doctors who practice every day do about low probability cases? And then you do a whole interview about that. So then that's the anecdote. And then the next thing is the meat. So it's already like, oh, the real issue here is doctors treating rare problems, but there's so many rare problems that they can't keep track of all of them. And then you might have, so that's a piece of meat. And then you might have a quote from someone who has to do this. And then maybe another piece of meat. Well, on the other hand, if we look out for Ehlers-Danlos syndrome in every single patient, we're going to be sending a lot of silly labs. So you sort of talk about this balance between over-testing and under-testing. And then maybe another quote. And then maybe you end with the anecdote. Well, actually, it turned out that Ryan just had indigestion. But it was a good reminder that medicine is hard. So that's the kebab thing. I just made that whole thing up, right? Literally, just like, you know, okay. It's a format. It's like a Jell-O mold, okay? And then there's something like, I'm not going to do this for each one. There's the inverted martini. The inverted pyramid, which is the idea you have like the key facts at top. The next thing is facts that are important but not as useful. And the bottom is sort of like, well, if you're still reading, this is useful too. And the idea there is, in the internet age, the attention span is very short. So just spill your beans and get it done. The other one is sort of a different version of that, which is the martini glass. That's what it has, the pyramid on the top. You start with your important facts, and then you give like the long stem is the timeline, the chronology. Here's what happened, when, and why it matters. And then at the end, your kicker is sort of like, oh, and here's why it matters. So that, three structures that you can do, and your article could fit into those. Or sometimes you might say, well, I kind of want to do a kebab, but I want to like do the kebab second, right after I do a funny quote. I'm going to start with a quote and it's unrelated, and then lead to an anecdote. So the idea is that unlike abstract methods, results, discussion, there are three or four or five or a zillion different ways to do this, and I rely on some of them to write quickly. Because unless you're writing about something that's in your wheelhouse, like I'm a PE specialist, my name is Jeff Klein, and I'm going to write about PE, you have to write quickly because you're learning about a topic that you may know pretty well, but you have to know more to write about it for a large audience. So you're doing the go for a deep dive, and you're writing at the same time. So you got to write fast. Otherwise, the news peg, the reason they're going to publish you, goes away. So I can't write about Michael Phelps using cupping on his back during the Olympics 2 weeks after the Olympics. I can see, oh, God, what are those things? Oh, he's cupping. I have 48 hours to get this piece out. And so with those formats in your mind, you can sort of, it's like jazz. You have a good structure, and then you improvise within those structures.
What's interesting is that with TV, that 48 hours is 2 hours or 1 hour or even 30 minutes. And I couldn't get so many of the PR groups with hospitals I've seen in the past understand, you know, that these time frames are so narrow that they're on such short deadlines. And it's the same way. I mean, you know, when we get stuff as a spokesman's network for ASAP, we'll get, you know, this, and they have a deadline of 2 hours or 3 hours. And it's important to be able to have that availability. And that's that availability I was talking about. With they will come back to you if they know that you're available when they need you. And you know, I've done interviews on sidewalks. I've done interviews outside restaurants behind my car. I've done one interview right before I walked into the airport with my baseball hat on, my glasses on, unshaved. I mean, more than I am now, but unshaved to the point that you know, I thought, this looks ridiculous. But they're like, well, all we need is the content. It doesn't matter how you look. And I was like, that's great, because I'm not bringing the A game this time. So, you know, I think we've barely scratched the surface. Just like most news stories, most things, we barely scratched the surface. So how can folks get in touch with you to learn more, whether email, social media?
So on social media, I have Twitter at Jeremy Faust. I also have my podcast with Lauren Westifer. We have Foam Podcast, where we talk about what's going on in the foam world. And my email address is jsfaust@gmail.com. And always happy to just sort of steer people in the right direction. The few times I've tried to edit people, I end up failing them, because it's like I work on deadlines, and if it's, you know, so I've gotten to the point where I have to say, I can't edit this piece of yours, but I'll take a look at it and tell you, hey, this is awesome. Here's where I think you might want to send it. And always happy to do that. So it's, and please do it, because we need more people. Like today I published something just now, which I edited partially during this conference, about this story of this guy who, in this cop in Ohio, who overdosed, quote unquote, after touching fentanyl. Well, that's not possible. So I talked to some toxicologists, I was editing it. So it was a fun story to write, and now it's out there, and I hope people read it. But there's another story today that I can't get to. And people need to know, now, you know what, guys, there's better medical information than what's going viral on the web. And even, unfortunately, sometimes real news gets faked out. And so we need more active voices, especially within the emergency medicine community, to basically stand up for, you know, truth in the, not the American way, but truth in the medical, scientific, realistic, good way. And that's what I'd love to do more of in my life, and, you know, hopefully get a few people to help so we can all, you know, fill in each other's weaknesses, and sometimes we're busy, and I think it would be great if we had a bigger community doing that.
I absolutely agree, and you know, happy to help out. And of course, I'm going to lean on you for the print side of things, and hopefully I can be an asset to folks for the TV, radio side of things. As for me, you can contact me, youreverydaymedicine@gmail.com, youreverydaymedicine@gmail.com, as well as @everydaymed on Twitter. And until next time, Jeremy, thank you so much. And as you can hear, folks are starting to enjoy the outdoors here during the break of the conference. And until next time, this is ASAP Frontline.